In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stevens Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stevens Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening. And please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest today needs no introduction, as it's he who cannot be named. But it will add that he was a longtime rhythm guitar player in the Dwarves and has had several solo albums out. The latest, Imposter, is available from Spaghetti Town Records and features our recent coolest song in the world, Funny Farm. We'll hear a bit of that now, followed by my chat with he who cannot be named here in Little Stevens' Underground Garage.
Everything is fake, nothing is real. Everyone pleads guilty, it's part of the deal. In old new clothes, the emperor crawls, and high lows are only foul balls. Yeah, lunatics are blind, the fighting for balls.
Mighty Manfred with you for your coolest conversations, and my guest is he who cannot be named. And he who cannot be named, like Black Dahlia, an original member of the Dwarves, has also released a number of solo albums, the latest of which is Imposter, provides us with this week's coolest song in the world, Funny Farm. So thank you for joining us, he who cannot be named.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, so the Dwarves, I know they began like in Chicago, they relocated to San Francisco, or your roots in the Chicago area at all or not?
Yeah. Well, I'm from a small town in Wisconsin, and I met those guys when they were all like 16, 15 years old. And I was always the older, I was a couple years older. And I met those guys in the North Shore of Chicago where they were living, and I was living at the time too.
So you were a couple years older. Does that mean you were buying beer for these guys?
Yeah. No, they were all pretty delinquent at that point. You know, they were bad kids. We were. Well, I wasn't a kid anymore. They were the bad kids. I was the bad guy.
So bad guy. So you weren't like sort of the adult, sort of shrugging his shoulders, going, "Hey, you know, kids got to be kids."
No, not really. No. I wasn't much older than them.
So. When you were like growing up, was there much music in your household? I mean, was there music going on? Yeah,
there sure was. Yeah, my dad played the piano. He played like classical stuff and show tunes and things. You know, like he would like stuff like Rodgers and Hammerstein show tunes, whatever stuff from that era. You know,
yeah,
60s and 70s, and he would play all that. He was really into Dr. Zhivago. I remember that movie, Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah.
He would play the theme from that. He'd play all the time. And I was just like, I was fascinated. He would do like a little show too. Like, you know, he'd play, do like a little show or something. And so I wanted to be like him and play the piano. So I started playing when I was like 7 years old or something. I took the lessons. And all the rest of my brothers and my sister, they all like played horns and things. In fact, it was like at times, it kind of seemed like a music school at our house. You know, you'd hear like all these people practicing after school. You know, I picked up the guitar on 16. I learned that.
Well, what got you to pick up the guitar?
Believe it or not, I play guitar in the church guitar group. I was watching it. I was like, I could do that. And then, you know, I'd get to be in back and kind of fuck around during church. So I didn't really care about the actual church stuff, you know.
Well, what kind of
I did. So, I played like
You played in the church group. What kind of church was it?
It was a Catholic church.
Oh, wow. Catholics are pretty rocking for a Catholic church to have electric guitar.
Yeah, well, this is the 70s, you know, things were kind of hippie-ish everywhere, and, you know, that was kind of what was going on, and, you know.
And so you start playing guitar. So what was your first guitar? What kind of guitar was it?
Oh, man.
You remember?
Some kind of cheap acoustic guitar. I can't really remember that. But I do remember one of my brothers started playing too. We played together. We found the coolest old guitar that some kid sold my brother for like $5 or something. We, you know, it was big hollow body. And we later on learned it was kind of a rare, cool guitar. It was Gretsch Monkeys Rock and Roll Model, and you can look it up. It's still I don't even know what happened to it, but it was so cool. It had made the best feedback. It was just like a really cool guitar.
Well, you've mentioned your family. It seems like it was pretty large. So how many brothers and sisters do you have exactly?
I have four brothers and one sister.
Four brothers and one sister. So was there ever a moment where you and your brothers or with your sister even thought about making or having a band or playing in a band with your siblings?
Yeah, for sure. Me and my one brother, Matt, for sure. We did a lot of work playing together when we were kids. And we actually had briefly a band. I lived in Madison, Wisconsin with him one winter, mm-hmm. kind of a shitty winter, but we started a band we called the Mopes. And we played a couple like house parties and stuff like that, but it was fun, you know.
Oh man, the Mopes sounds like a great name. So what kind of stuff did the Mopes do?
It was original music and it was kind of artsy. I think we had like a big kind of art. We had some kind of weird artsy look too. I don't remember. And it was so many years. It was like, we're talking like 1984 or 5 or something. My memory's a little blanked out on that one.
You know? All right. Well,
but it was fun.
So you kind of get to you meet these guys. Well, how did you meet the other guys in the Dwarves? Because I know there's this band, the Suburban Nightmare. I'm trying to figure out how you guys kind of got together and formed that.
Well, that was the band. There was Suburban Nightmare. Dwarves was a little bit later when we changed the name. And I met those guys because they were interested in me because I had a Farfisa organ that I bought. From some guy, I don't even remember, you know, for like $100 or whatever. Like I was in school, I was in college in Waukegan, Illinois, and I lived in the dorm there and I had this organ and I got a knock on the door and there was this like kid, this scrawny kid with long black hair who introduced himself to me and later on he became Blag. I won't say what his name was then, but it wasn't Blag. And he was like, yeah, I heard you had a Farfisa organ. Like his friend was going to the school, like lived across the hall from me and told me about it. And they had a guy with a farf who was in the band in the Suburban Nightmare, and he had quit the band or something. So they were specifically looking for someone with this organ. And there I was, you know, so I went and tried out. I think they were much more interested in the actual instrument than me, but you know, I got the gig.
Well,
I still have it too. It's an amazing organ.
So is it like, it's not like some double tier thing though, right? It's just a...
No.
Is
no,
it?
No, it's a single. It's a cool, like I learned a little about it. It was made only for a few years in Italy in the 60s, mm-hmm. late 60s. You hear it on a lot of cool old, like, stuff like your band, you know, like shit like that. You know, you would hear something like, you know, like garage punk would play that. That's what the Suburban Nightmare was.
Well, right. And so, in fact, why were you guys doing that kind of sound as opposed to just being just going with sort of a straight punk sound from the outset?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, back then we thought it was more punk. We were snotty kids. We were like, we're more punk than those guys. And, you know, in fact, this punk had been around a few years at that point. This is the early 80s.
Right.
It really got started late 70s. And, you know, we were just like, we're more, and we just liked the records. We listened to all those, you know, old like Pebbles and Nuggets records and stuff like that. And, you know, like people are always wanting to find something that no one else is into. And that kind of was our thing. Like nobody even knows about this stuff. This is so cool, you know. And we did all these songs by the Seeds, I remember. It was a great band from back then.
was funny as I listened to a couple of Suburban Nightmare tracks on YouTube, and I heard the Farfisa really prominent. So that is you playing the Farfisa?
It is, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's well. So you guys go on to more of you change the name, more of a punk, just straight up punk thing. You signed to Sub Pop. There's Blood, Guts, and Pussy comes out in 1990. Thank Heaven for Little Girls, 91. Sugarfix in 93. And then in 93, there was the whole thing about you being reported dead. And thankfully, that not the case. And on the new album, Imposter, you have the track on there, Not Dead. So does that relate back to this misreported stabbing?
I guess it does. You know, I mean, I originally wrote that song as kind of a revenge song or whatever. And that the opening part of that has, that song has Nick Oliveri singing it, who's a member of the Dwarves and has been for a long time. Or Rex Everything is the Dwarves' name. But so I had him singing it. He just threw that in the beginning. You know, like I didn't actually write that out for him, where he talks about, you know, you crap it in, pronounced dead or whatever. So, yeah, it has to do with that. But I wasn't planning it that way. I just liked it.
Well, so Not Dead's off Imposter. The album's out on Spaghetti Town Records. When and where did you put the album together?
We recorded it in San Francisco at a great studio. This guy named Scott Lamas, who has a studio in Marin County. And we did that. Actually, I wrote the stuff. It was kind of like pandemic era kind of stuff. Like I wrote pretty much half the album before all that stuff happened in March of 2020. I think we actually demoed out about half of them. And then there was a lot of downtime, you know, for everybody. And so I think I wrote the rest of the songs. And then when we reconvened, learned them, and just went in the studio and recorded them. But, you know, the guys I'm playing with now are really good. And once they learn it, we go in and out. We worked fast. You know, we did, like, I think the first session, we got all the drums in, like, 4 hours or something for the whole album, which was amazing, you know, because we knew the song.
Well, right. Well, some of the songs are short, but still 4 hours is pretty happening.
Yeah, I was happy with those guys.
I think with us, it kind of averages, you know, a song an hour.
not
the same pace. Yeah. Not the same pace. Well, our coolest song in the world this week is Funny Farm. It's like the opening track to Imposter. Where does that one come from? What inspired you?
Yeah, now that one is kind of a unique song on this record because I wrote it with Black. It's pretty much the last thing I've done with him.
Yeah,
I haven't done much work with the Dwarves in the last few years. But I did. There was a brief period where I wanted to start. I said, hey, man, let's do like a psych band, kind of like we used to have with Suburban Nightmare. Mm-hmm. So we got together and we started writing a few things. And that was the one that came out of it. I mean, it was all my music. But he came up with the Funny Farm line and a bunch of the lyrics. And then I changed them around and stuff, you know. But yeah, it's really a collaborative song. So it's a little bit dwarvesy, I guess, because of that.
Yeah, well, and it's still catchy. And I was going to ask, so who set the fire to burn the Funny Farm down?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know, that whole thing was, I was thinking that, I mean, it's sort of a political, I guess, I don't know if it's political, but I wrote those lines during the 2020 was kind of a crazy year, you know, with a lot of shit happening around the country, not only the pandemic, but I lived near Oakland. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of riots and stuff like that going on and looting and people burning things, you know? And so that's how originally was written as sort of a Trump song. And I took some of the Trump references out. I mean, there's still one kind of big thing in there.
Yeah.
But I didn't really want to have a Trump song, you know, but I did want to kind of reflect stuff that was going on at that time. And so it's not only that kind of political kind of craziness, which is still happening. You know, it seems like there's some Funny Farm stuff going on still. But, you know, people on the streets burning shit down, like, you know, for what? You know, you're going into Target and grabbing things because you're mad about the cops or whatever. It seemed kind of loony, you know.
Well, the second track on the album, very short one, it's called Panic Attack. And I haven't even told this to Sammy, but I like had, I guess it was a panic attack last Thursday, and felt like it was like a heart attack. I had never had, you know, I'd had acute like heartburn before. So I knew what that was. And this was just like completely different. And but like a chest pain, and then it traveled to my back. And then all of a sudden, in an instant, I was like covered in sweat. So it was scary, you know, but I went to the ER, and you know, it's like, oh, no, you know, you don't have any of these enzymes in your blood after a certain amount of time. That's like the way they can tell if you've had one. And they gave me that test several times, and the EKG, and everything was fine. And I was like, well, what the hell was it? And they were like, well, we think maybe just acute heartburn. And I was like, you know, I know what that is. It's not what happened. And I said, well, what about a panic attack? Yeah, you know, those things, you never know. It could have been that.
Yeah, that's real shit, man. My wife actually, my wife Jennifer, wrote some of those things. She wouldn't let me credit her. She's like, I don't want to be credited on that. But we were talking, like, she has panic attacks, I think, you know, or she described them to me. And so she was just telling me about them. And so I just like, that's the song. We got to make that into a song, you know. So that was the inspiration for that.
Well, I hope she's doing all right.
Oh, she's fine. It was just once in a while, you know, things happen. Like,
I know. It was crazy. Anyway, yeah, got to keep you healthy. So another highlight for me on the album was that tune Trash, you know, One Man's Treasure. One Man's Treasure, is it not? He could not be named Trash?
Yeah, that's I like that one too. Yeah, Trash. I mean, that one I wrote during 2020. I was just thinking about all the, just I'm watching TV, yeah, just all the different things that can be considered trash, you know, like even the air we breathe, the food we eat, you know, I mean, maybe not all of us, but me, you know, stuff I see, stuff I hear, you know, stuff I think, you know, it's all over, it's inescapable.
So talking about like food we eat, you try to keep yourself, I mean, coming out of the panic attack thing, I'm still thinking maybe about this, but try and keep yourself healthy, or what is your sort of your regimen, right? You try and exercise or don't worry about that, or
well, you know, I guess I'd like to exercise more than I do. I definitely have plans now that I'm here in Arizona. There's a lot of hiking here. I do a little meditation. I just try to take it easy. I'm a pretty easygoing person. I think music is a way to stay healthy. I'm sober, and I've been sober for the last 14 years now. And so ever since that happened, my life has gotten a lot healthier for sure. Yeah. You know, getting a lot of the trash out of my body. You know?
Speaking of trash.
There was a lot of that going on for many years, you know.
This large family, and your dad, you know, being sort of playing piano and stuff. Is your family generally supportive of your music adventures, endeavors?
Yeah, well, you know, I did a project with my family. My parents passed away a few years ago, but I see my siblings, and I did a project in 2020. I released an album that very few was kind of under the radar. It's a children's album. It's called Fibulous Faber and Friends. And I did it with my sister. I collaborated with my sister and my deceased mother, believe it or not. She, when we were looking at their, after they died, they both died in a car accident in 2009. It was very sudden, whatever. But we went to the house, and we had to go through all the stuff in the house in Wisconsin. And I found a bunch of books and things. My mom was writing. She was a writer. She'd never published anything, but she attempted to publish a lot of children's books and stuff. She was a kindergarten teacher. I found one that was called Mischievous Monsters and Bothersome Beasts. And I was like, what? This is cool. Each page I still have it. It's kind of like a Dr. Seuss kind of thing, where it's a rhyme. And it's a monster. And so the whole idea was, from my mom as a parent, she's like, they're all attached to a behavior. Like, there's one called the gum globber. And the gum globber, and I changed some of the names. The gum globber goes around and, like, he chews gum and then leaves gobs of glum, globs of gum all over the house, you know, under the seat, whatever, you know. And so the idea is, like, the kids aren't really doing it, the monster's doing it. And so the monsters get the blame for the stuff that the kids are doing. So I made a record. I went through and I took all of these poems and I wrote songs for them, each one of them. Yeah. And then I recorded them all, like, in home, like I did in my own, like, home studio, you know, in my house. Yeah. And then I got different people to sing on it, including all my family members. They all sing a song, and I got them to do backing vocals. And I'm still working on it. My sister then wrote a script to a play, and now it's actually going to be produced. I mean, we're pretty sure it's going to be produced up at a community theater up in Montana where she lives. It's pretty cool. So I still work with my family on stuff. I get them to do it. My brother Matt does my videos a lot of times. He's a video editor, so he'll do that. One of my brothers is an actor, you know. He's like a stage actor, so he's got this big, deep voice. So if you ever hear that in any of my records, that's my brother coming in, you know, doing a line or two.
Wow. Well, I wanted to ask you if you had any solo tour dates upcoming. Today's the 19th, and I saw online the Dwarves have got tour dates coming up, but are you not playing with them now?
No, I don't do that anymore. I don't have anything lined up. I'd like to, you know, we'll see. I mean, this move to Arizona has been a big change, but I think we can get things together and play some shows later in the year. You know, I'd like to. I'm definitely open to it. I've kind of got to get settled here a bit, figure out a way. But yeah, I have a good friend out here that has a band called Besmirchers. I don't know if you know Lenny Mental. And he's from Tucson. It's a punk band, kind of real hardcore punk band. And we'll put together some shows with those guys.
Oh, okay. Well, let me add. So the guys that are playing, and the liner notes I have in front of me, Eric Borst on drums, or Diablo Borst on drums, Mike Patton, some backing vocals. Let's see, Keith Muller, lead guitar. Bobby Ramone bass. Are these the guys that will be playing out with you?
Well, Mike Patton is not. Mike Patton, I never actually met. I worked with him remotely. He lives in Tennessee. Yeah. He's got a really great band called Vista Blue, and it's kind of a band camp. Like, he one of these guys, he just writes a lot of songs.
Yeah.
And I worked with him and another guy named Dustin Umberger, who has a band called Grim Deeds, and he just, the same thing, just like, puts out hundreds of songs, mostly on Bandcamp. And so I worked with Mike. He did all the backing vocals. You know, did all of them. And I did some too, between me and him. Yeah. But then it sent them to me. Crazy Keith Mueller, I've been working with for years now. He's been on the last three records. And he has a band called Bite. Him and Eric are both in that band. It's a San Francisco band.
Okay.
But he's a great guitar player. I mean, I gotta have a lead player with me, you know, because I'm kind of like a ham-handed rhythm player. You know, I gotta have a good guy too. And then Bobby Ramone, just a really great bass, played with a lot of different people over the years, including even like Dee Dee Ramone. You know, just little gigs here and there. But he's been with me for a while. He's a really solid, heavy bass player. And Eric's just amazing too, you know. I mean, I'm really happy with these guys. It was hard moving them away from them, you know, so I got to keep it going somehow.
Right. Well, we could take a listen to another track off the new album, off Imposter, and I want us to go out on the cut, Bad Words. What's your earliest recollection of hearing a bad word?
That's funny, man. That's a good question. I have a very clear, because my family did not swear. They were all very Catholic and very, you know, like, no, my parents never swore. Like, if my dad, like, hit his head instead of "God damn it," he'd say, "God bless America," you know.
Oh, wow.
And so I didn't really realize even then that he was swearing, you know. But I remember I was in school, it was like first grade, I think, and I was in the bathroom, and I saw that someone had written on the wall a bad word, and another kid said, "That's a bad word, that's a bad word." It was F-A-C-K. And so I was like, fact, don't say fact. So that was my first bad word.
Well, I hope you did get in trouble with your parents saying fact in front of them.
I don't know. I might have.
Well, the tune has got a very like a garage kind of rock, kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
It harkens back to, I guess, Suburban Nightmare in a way.
Got the Farfisa. In fact, the whole album has Farfisa on it.
Oh, is that the same Farfisa, by the way? Have you kept it all these years?
Absolutely. It sure is. I hung on to it, man. It actually got more famous than me by far. It was on a Smash Mouth song back in the late 90s. I forget the name.
The Mysterians tune they do?
It's kind of, it was sort of like, I think they did kind of a ripoff of that, but it was their own song.
Okay.
But it was a big hit. It was on the radio. I'd be like, that's my, and the, my Farfisa was in the studio where they recorded that. They used it. God, that's my organ.
Well, man, you should be getting a royalty off that.
I should be. I know. How does that work? So, but yeah, I hung on to it. I kept it. I found a barf guy that fixed it up for me. Yeah, so it's in good shape.
Well, let me thank you, he who cannot be named, for chatting with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you, Manfred.
Well, we're going to go out with that other track off your latest solo album, Imposter. Here's Bad Words in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
The gift of clarity since I was very young. Some say it's an act of charity. Each time I bite my tongue, never understood grammar. Couldn't get the rules, but I never stammered when they kicked me out of school. I don't think I stuttered. My speech is not slurred. They stink like peanut butter. Don't pretend that you ain't heard my bad words.
With a bit of Bad Words, that was He Who Cannot Be Named here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. The track is from his latest solo album, Imposter. That's out on Spaghetti Town Records. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the ever-masked and mysterious one for visiting me today. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Longtime favorites of the Underground Garage, the Anderson Council, have a new album out, and it's called The Devil, The Tower, The Star, The Moon. And member Peter Horvath is going to join us to tell us all about it on our next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock, here in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.